So what's going on? Nice to have you on this Tuesday. Welcome to the program. Good morning. Good afternoon. Wherever you are, I'm Jim Rome. Great to have you here. All right, so we went open phones in hour number one. Got some college basketball for you in hour number two. We are efforting the head coach of UConn, Dan Hurley. He should be joining me momentarily. As soon as I run him down, we will do that. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're talking Princeton hoops with Mitch Henderson. Sweet 16 is nice. There's some amazing matchups. So in the meantime, as we're doing that, you can hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. It really did happen. I really did lead the show with a World Baseball Classic take because the tournament never looked like that before. So I'm not going to say that something that really didn't interest me a hell of a lot is now all of a sudden the best thing ever, but I will say that's the best thing to happen to baseball in a long time. That was awesome. So the question now is, what do you do with it? You know, are we going to see this thing every 6 years? I don't think it works every year, but I would try to capitalize on this momentum. It's a really good thing. I know this. It's a hell of a lot better than the All-Star game. Way better than the All-Star game. I would stick that thing right in the middle of the season and then do the All-Star game the way the NFL did the Pro Bowl. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, Major League Baseball could use the NFL's Pro Bowl for their All-Star game. Major League Baseball should play flag football on the sand for its All-Star game, and it would probably be better than the actual All-Star game. Or just slam the WBC in there when it's the right year, when it comes up, right in the middle of the season. That's how good that was. I'm not saying you can replicate every one of those moments, but there were more moments than just Ohtani Trout, but that was the best moment. Amazing. We talked about Rick Pitino. On top of that, I want to talk about Lamar Jackson, his situation. He still does not have an agent, but apparently, according to Mike Florio, he has somebody representing him, contacting teams. But that person is not certified by the NFLPA. So I want to get into all of that. And I meant to get to it yesterday, but since Rick Pitino had his presser and there was all that energy, it only seemed to enrage the Big Blue Nation even more. Which I think, frankly, and you know Lexington, you know I love you, you know I have friends there, you know I have business there. It's kind of idiotic to think that you should run John Calipari right now. And by kind of idiotic, I mean really idiotic. I'm not saying everything is perfect, and I'm not saying there aren't things that Cal isn't responsible for, and I'm not saying there aren't things that Cal needs to fix. He does. He does. But he deserves the right to fix it himself. one 800 636 8686. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at right now. Also, quickly, reaction. David T. in Nashville. I guess 70 is the new 69. Rick Pitino. Good one, David T. in Nashville. Hey, Jim, a comprehensive list of Mike Trout's accomplishments in big games is as follows. Signed Marshall in Orlando. Formerly NPB. Former Angel Honk. But they are dead to me. If you want to take the organization to task, that's fine. But all of you running in here to kill Mike Trout for having never won anything before? Trout can't play 1-on-9. Now, yes, he did re-up. But you can't put that on him. Chris in Milwaukee. Jimmy, I haven't seen a Trout smoke like that since the Rome family was the last in Eagle River. That's fair, man. He did get smoked. But that'll happen when you face Shohei when he's going 102 cheese, 102, 102, 102, and then that nasty 89-mile-per-hour slide piece. That is the epitome of happens to us all. That's how good Shohei is, that Trout was that overmatched.
Happens to us all.
And one more, Rome. It's only fitting that Trout struck out looking to end that game. That's how every season ends for Trout in Major League Baseball. Him just watching others win playoff games and championships. Ohtani should just leave the Angels right now. Signed, Jeremiah. Hot take much, Jay? He can't just leave the Angels right now. He's under contract. And why are you all rushing in to kill Trout? Dude is arguably not only the best player in the game still, but one of the best players ever. Ever. You can't hang this on him. He can't scout, develop, manage, draft, and sign free agents all himself. Thought the guy handled his business the way he normally does in that tournament. All right. Anybody else want in? I'm going to continue to effort Dan Hurley. And we're going to talk some Princeton ball as well. Why don't we talk Lamar for a moment? Here is the latest in the ongoing Lamar saga. So I mentioned Mike Florio has a report that, quote, a representative for Jackson is contacting more than one team in an effort to spark negotiations aimed at a possible offer sheet. The representative is not certified by the NFL Players Association per multiple sources. So Lamar, I mean, he'll go far enough to say, all right, what I'm doing is not working. So I'm going to get some help. I'm going to get somebody to see if they can get something started and we can get at least an offer sheet. So in other words, Lamar finally got around to asking somebody to help him. Maybe even somebody to represent him. Something he should have done so long ago, except, according to this report, this player is not, or this person, is not certified by the NFLPA. So who is it?
What?
Who is now representing this guy? Yes, I said that. He has somebody, according to a report, talking to teams, but that person is not certified by the NFLPA. What? So what? Who is it? Is it a lawyer? Who knows? Is it some accountant? I don't know. Is it a business owner, a CEO? Is it one of his boys? I don't know. My man, Lamar, I don't want anybody to tell me how to do my job, so the last thing I'm going to do is tell you how to do your job, especially your job. What do I know about your job? But I do have a question. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job, but I do have a question. The hell are you doing now, big dude? You do know. And also stated in that same Florio report that the NFL has told teams not to negotiate with representatives not certified by the NFLPA. The league is on record with that. So what do? You have somebody negotiating or at least proxying or working on your behalf who is not certified by the NFLPA. And for who? For what? For what? Pride? Because you don't want to back down? Money? Because you don't want to pay a commission to an agent? Which probably would end up being walk-around money for you, considering what that agent could and will get you. And again, for who? For what? None of these guys that you don't want to pay would ever try to do your job. Because they're not qualified. So why are you trying to do their job? Because you're not qualified. I understand other players have done this. I understand that even other players have had success doing it. But your deal is a completely different deal. We're talking about one of the biggest deals ever. A deal to set up your kids, 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 kids. One of the biggest deals, arguably, ever in sports. So why would you not hire the very best person you could find to handle the most important document of your life, the most important negotiation of your life? Why are you looking for a cheaper, less qualified person to handle the most important negotiation of your entire career? Because, by the way, it's going terribly. The whole thing could rip apart. It can blow up right in your face. Look, Lamar, trust me, dude, I get it. I've been in this game more than 30 years, which means I've been paying agents, I have been paying lawyers. I have been paying managers. I've been paying PR people. I've done this in my entire career. I know it sucks, dude. Those are hard checks to write. And I'm not talking about the 3% that you're probably looking at. Or maybe even 2%. You could probably find somebody who would do that deal for 2%. In Hollywood, that's not how they work. In Hollywood, they all get 5, or they all get 10, or they get crazy monthly retainers. In fact, when I look at what I've paid out to my reps over the years, I don't even know how I've made a single dollar. They all get a piece. Hell yes, it hurts to scratch that check. Hell yes, it hurts to chip them off every bleeping month. No offense, David Feldman, you're a great attorney. But I know, dude, I know. However, I let them do their thing so I can keep the main thing the main thing. I let them do their thing so I can do my thing. That's why I hire them. I do my thing on radio and TV because that's where I'm great. I am not great at negotiating contracts. I hire somebody else who is good to great at that. That's how that works. I promise you, what you would have to pay an agent, and I know it's a hell of a lot of money, but it's still a drop in the bucket compared to what that same person is going to end up getting you. They can't do what you can do, but you can't do what they can do because they're schooled up. They have a network of relationships because of who they know and what they know and the history and experience they have. In dealing with these same owners and GMs, they're wired for it. It's where they live. It's what they're built for. It's their job. You're not like that. You're an incredible player. You're an incredible teammate. You're a great dude. Hell, you're a former unanimous league MVP. Lamar, you're about all the right stuff. But it doesn't mean that you're qualified to negotiate your own deal because you're not. How do I know? Look at how it's going. A real good agent is going to not only educate you on things that you don't know. And again, it's not your fault you don't know. You don't know what you don't know, and you don't know because you're not trained to do it. But not only will an agent help you with these things that you don't know, a really good agent, and I'm not talking about a yes man or a sycophant, a really good agent, if you hire the right one, is going to tell you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear, what the market really is. I'm not saying that you shouldn't fight for every single dollar that you can get. You should. Every athlete should. Every player should. You just shouldn't be fighting that fight yourself. Nor should you have somebody who is not certified by the NFLPA to fight that fight for you when the league has already made it clear that teams are not to negotiate with people who are not certified by the NFLPA. So what's the reaction to that? That I didn't have anybody negotiate for me. I'm just having one of my guys run around and try to get an offer sheet. Again, for who? For what at this point? The deal's not getting done. Tell me again why you would not hire an NFLPA certified agent. Tell me again. Pride? If it's pride, get over yourself. Swallow your pride, check your ego at the door, and add another member to your team that excels at this. And if it's not pride, then it's money. I get it. It's money. But you have to make an investment in yourself. And this is going to be some of the best money you've ever invested. Not doing so, in fact, here's the irony, right? He's not doing it because he doesn't want it to cost him money. But by not doing it, it may not only not save you money, it may cost you money. If that makes sense. Listen, I didn't have a huge issue when the story first dropped that he was going to rep himself. Your life, your career. I'm cool with that. That's fine. It didn't seem like a very good idea when I heard it, but I've heard worse ideas. That was my take then. But given that this has been going on now for like 2 years and that you're no closer to a deal reportedly, and now we're looking at a situation where it might blow up for both the team and the player, not having an NFLPA certified rep is officially a bad idea. Look what it's gotten you. Again, you need somebody to tell you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. Somebody who will tell you this, that nobody else in the NFL does business like the Cleveland Browns. Nobody else is going to guarantee you $230 million plus because nobody else does business like the Browns. And the only reason the Browns did it is because they're the Browns. And because they were desperate. And because they were ignorant. That deal, again, is not a comp. That deal is not the comp you think it is. It's an aberration, an anomaly. That's not the bar. That's not the standard. That's not the precedent. And no one is operating as if it is other than you and whoever's running around on your behest right now. Lamar, dude, I'm rooting for you. I want to be so clear about this. I think every athlete should do everything they can to get every last dollar they can. I mean that. I'm rooting for you as one of the most exciting players in the NFL. I want you to make all the money you can possibly make. But dude, hire an agent and let them handle it for you. Just own that you thought you could do it, but you're in way too deep. You're in over your head. And that this is as big a reason probably as any for this thing not getting done. Keep the main thing. Hire somebody qualified to handle the business side. You gave it a shot. I'm cool with that. It's not working. Own that, adjust, fix it, get it done. I mean, as an example, I'll have Dan Hurley next segment. As an example, could you imagine if I did negotiate my own deals? Think about how different my life would be. Could you imagine what this show would be like had I negotiated all my own deals? I would probably still be broadcasting from high atop hot dog on a stick. And that's a true story. I used to broadcast in a mall, in a studio, above hot dog on a stick. Fact. Or maybe if I was a little better at negotiating than I'm giving myself credit for, maybe I could have upgraded to Esparo. Be proud of myself for being on top of a Panda Express or working out of a food court. I don't know, man. You gave it a shot. It's not working. Hire the best agent that you can because it's one of the most important contracts ever. Do it, dude. Do it now. All right, when we come back, Dan Hurley will be joining us. Right now, you may be thinking about basketball and taxes, which, by the way, are almost due. Do you want to win tax season? Then go to Jackson Hewitt. You'll get your biggest refund guaranteed. Here is the slam dunk. Tax prep is 50% off. Do not miss your shot to save. Hurry into your nearest Jackson Hewitt before April 9th. Limited time offer for new clients that are filing at participating locations. Max savings, $200. Just go to jacksonhewitt.com/50 for terms, jacksonhewitt.com/50.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Get right to it. Time to talk Sweet 16. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. We are joined right now by the head coach at UConn. Fifth season there. Three trips to the NCAA tournament. Previously the head coach at Wagner in Rhode Island. Huskies 27-8, 13-7 in conference play. They are the fourth seed in the West. They're taking on Arkansas tomorrow night in Vegas. Absolutely love the matchup. Dan Hurley is my guest. Dan, great to spend some time with you. How you feeling, coach?
Feeling great, man. It's been an awesome ride here, starting the year unranked, finishing the year, ranked top 10, and now get a chance to play in the second weekend. So, and we're in Vegas, so pretty cool.
Really cool. Really cool, especially the way you started the year and to be where you are right now. Hey, Dan, listen, I understand that you're not satisfied just to be here. I understand you got plenty of work still ahead of you, but you are in the Sweet 16. You've got this incredible opportunity before you. So even with unfinished business, is it safe to say that UConn basketball is, in fact, officially back?
Yeah, I think so. I think, it's like you take these steps, and it's like when you haven't been to the tournament in a while, kind of getting over the hump to make the tournament feels like this enormous mountain that you got to climb. And, so we're able to do that, obviously in year three into year four. And then the next mountain becomes like, advancing in the tournament, getting to the second weekend. Once that gets into the bones of your organization. Now you just believe that that's what you're supposed to do every season. So that's a big mountain to climb. And obviously, you know, when you play first round games and you're the coach at UConn, it's not the same feeling that you have when you're playing first round games and you're a coach at Rhode Island. You know, there's an enormous weight of just getting through the first game or two. You know, and now you feel a much greater sense of what's just the tactics.
Dan, respect for that answer. I really appreciate that answer. That's very candid because you're right. It's not the same thing. So when you lay it out like that, you needed that first round win pretty badly for the reason you mentioned, yet you trailed Iona by two at halftime. They're a 13. They're looking to pull a huge upset. They've got a Hall of Fame head coach. Even one of your assistants said that going into the locker room, the assistants were a little rattled, but not you, that you were completely calm. Given what was at stake, what were you feeling inside in that moment, and what was your message to your team at halftime in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, they were playing like in a way that I didn't think was sustainable. Iona, they played, you know, by far the best half they played. And I felt like we were playing well. The difference from the brutal feeling I felt against New Mexico State the year before was like we were just playing awful. And that was kind of a difference when I was kind of walking in into the locker room. You know, and then I just think we got a better team. You know, this is like it's a great group. I trust the team. We've proven ourselves over the course of a long season to be, you know, a team that can win big games. So I trust these guys.
Dan Hurley joining us. You just mentioned we have a better team. Hey, Dan, do you feel like you're even a better coach now than you were then? For instance, are you approaching this tournament any differently than you have past tournaments?
Every year you become a better coach. You know, I think every practice, every game, you just, you learn more. I've gotten a lot more comfortable in my own skin in terms of, you know, my relationship with the players. You know, like, I'm such an intense coach. I coach these guys hard. I'm very, very demanding. You know, but I also feel like, I'm growing as a leader. You know, obviously, you know, when you grow up in the household I did, you're going to have a great feel for tactics. You know, with everything that Bob Sr., you know, has taught me and Bob, it's like tactics, player development. You understand the actual coaching piece, but, you know, that leadership piece is, you know, how you need to present to your team on the day of big games, the confidence, the swagger, you know, the closeness with your players, the trust, all that stuff.
Dan Hurley is joining us for a few more moments. You mentioned family. I spoke to your brother, Bobby, a couple of weeks back. Love him. Man, I love Bob, always have. He told me he loved the desert and he was not looking to leave, yet there was that speculation that, you know, this is a Northeast guy. Maybe he's going to go back home. Maybe he'd be happier there. That said, how pumped were you to see him agree to an extension at Arizona State?
Yeah, you know, Bob, thrilled and not relieved because, you know, the success he's had there, you know, he really would be, I've coached in four NCAA tournaments there. If it wasn't for the COVID year that was canceled, then, you know, I don't know that anyone's done that ever in Tempe. So, you know, he's obviously taken that program, you know, to a level that it hasn't been to, and I think he's going to continue to grow it. But, you know, Bob's a special coach, and obviously, adding him, there's some speculation about him entering the Big East fray. It truly would have been the UFC if Bob would have joined everything that's going on in the Big East right now.
But by the way, it's neither here nor there. And so you might say to me, so we don't need to talk about it, but you just had a great analogy. It would be the UFC. Like, what would have happened if Bob joined the ranks of the Big East?
I mean, like, you know, where do you go for a game if he's in the Big East? Like, it's already brutal with Providence because of they're the regional rival and our fan bases absolutely despise each other. But now Ed Brothers into that mix, and now Patino at St. John's, and, you know, Ed's now at at Georgetown, you know, and now I'm in, you know, shock. I mean, it's just Sean Miller. I mean, the league right now without Bob, it's, you know, it feels like it's going to be the preeminent conference in college basketball.
Dan Hurley joining me. One last thought, Dan, before you go. What about Pitino? What's your reaction to Rick Pitino working his way all the way back and getting an enormous opportunity, which I think he absolutely earned and deserved, but getting that opportunity at 70, what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he don't look 70. You know, he, you know, I didn't know what he would look like when we shook hands, because you could just see him on TV. Sometimes TV lies, but you know, he's got all the pop, it looks like, that he needs. You know, to crush it at St. John's, it's great for the league. You know, you're right. I mean, he's had to prepare coach at his caliber. You know, he's one of the all-time greats to do it. And he had to humble himself and coach in, you know, some different type of places than somebody his caliber is used to. But, you know, this is great for the league. It's going to be great for, you know, fan interest and excitement surrounding these games. It's just going to make the league stronger, and it's going to obviously make those St. John's UConn games more exciting, especially the ones at the Garden.
You bet. One last thought, Dan. What about Arkansas? Eric Musselman's got his Hogs playing their best ball when it matters most. What stands out to you the most about them, and how do you like the way you match up with those guys?
Yeah, you know, just their, obviously the talent there, the, you know, with Smith and Black, two potential top 10 picks. You know, and then obviously Council and Walsh, who comes off the bench with two more late first, potential early second round pick types, just with, you know, with Davis and just the length, the athleticism, the way they're guarding right now. They're very, very physical. They're you know, they were a preseason top 10 team in the country. And when you put on film of what they've looked like late in the year, you know you're playing, you know, a team that's a top 10 team in the country. It's going to be a brutal game.
Brutal game, but an awesome, awesome matchup. UConn, the fourth seed in the West, and they're going to take on Arkansas tomorrow night in Vegas. Dan Hurley is the head coach at UConn. Dan, appreciate the time. I know you got a lot going on this week. Thanks for making time for us, and great to have you on the show.
Pleasure, man. It's always awesome being on with you, Jim.
You too, Dan. Appreciate you. Thank you very much. He's doing an amazing job there. They are good, man. Like, they're championship good. They are championship good. They're that good. And people are loving them right now. He said it best about Arkansas. Arkansas has got talent, man. Talent. Couple of potential lottery picks. They're long. They're athletic. They're guarding really well right now. And they're hot. I love that matchup. Hurley v. Muss. And two great teams. All right, when we come back, a great story. And I guarantee you, they're not just happy to be here. Princeton in the Sweet 16 for the first time. Their head coach, Mitch Henderson, joins me next. But first, here is your sports update. Rich Ackerman, take it away.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome, and we're on to the Sweet 16. I'm trying to get as many of the coaches from the Sweet 16 on as I can. We just had Dan Hurley on, and we are joined by another one right now. He is the head coach at Princeton. 11th season at his alma mater, making their second NCAA tournament appearance. As a Princeton player, he earned second-team All-Ivy League honors in 1998. This season, the Tigers 23-8 overall, 10-4 in conference play. As a 15 seed, they did shock the two, Arizona. Then they followed that up by beating Missouri. They've got Creighton coming up on Friday. Mitch Henderson is my guest. Mitch, it is great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Mitch, I'm awesome. It's great to talk to you. Really appreciate it. So let me ask you this. You lead Princeton to the Sweet 16. The school has never been there before. You're just the fourth 15 seed to get to the round of 16. Does it feel pretty normal and legit, or does it really feel incredibly surreal and a little crazy?
The second part, I'm calling you from the bus on the way to Philadelphia. We just left our campus after practice, and we're on our way to Louisville. And, you know, 1,000-plus alumni, fans, students, professors cheering us on, and we're pinching ourselves. Of course, I actually think we're playing really great basketball, and I'm psyched about our opportunities. But it's a really special moment here, and I gotta tell you. So one of my favorite moments in my life. This is my second time on your show. 1998, I called in. We spoke. We were a 5 seed, and I got some great jungle karma going into the first round of the NCAA tournament when I was a student. And it was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had talking to you, so I'm glad to be with you again.
My man, you telling that story is one of the cooler things that's happened to me in quite some time. I actually love that, Mitch. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's incredible.
I love it. I tell everybody this story. I hope that, sorry to interrupt you. It was so fun for me because we were a 5 seed, and you started off and you were like, how in the world did you guys get a 5 seed? And I started to tell some story about how Carl Malone's Louisiana Tech team got a 6 seed, and they were similar to us. And you were like, holy cow, I stand corrected. It was great. I was so happy.
Yeah, I've never been so. Yeah, Mitch, it's a great story. And although I don't enjoy being wrong, I'd never been so happy to be wrong. So that really was awesome. I mean, it really is amazing. Let me ask you, since we're talking about your playing days also at Princeton, your legendary coach, Pete Carril, passed away in August. He was such a transcendent figure in the college game. Can you even put into words how he helped to shape you as a person and the coach that you are right now?
Yeah, I can. And when you're deciding in the recruiting process where to go to school, I mean, I remember distinctly I wanted to play at Indiana or Butler. I'm from Indiana, and I had been getting recruited by, some of the Ivies, Princeton being one of them. And my dad was like, where do you want to go to school? And I started to talk through it, and I got to Princeton. He goes, okay, let's stop right there. And, you go out there. So first you sort of need your parents to sort of push you in that direction sometimes. And then you meet Coach Carril, who taught basketball, Jim, really as a metaphor for life. He was in the Hall of Fame the first year he retired, but he's a very decorated coach, but never made a Final Four, and didn't win a national championship, but really was transcendent in his own way. Four guys playing around a skilled post, very much of what you see now with the modern game. He was obsessed with Bill Russell's effect on the game. He always said that no one affected the game or did as many things to make their team win as Russell. So, and then there's the way he talked. He was very direct, very difficult to play for in some ways because he was so direct, but saw the game so fast and quickly. And he's influenced me so much that it's hard to know where his thoughts start and mine start, kind of, if that makes sense. So we're honoring him this season. We have a bow tie on our uniforms, which honor Coach Carril. And we're psyched to be in the Sweet 16. I know he's watching.
No, that does make sense, and I appreciate that response a lot. In fact, Mitch Henderson is my guest. What's really interesting, you said, when I said, is it surreal, is it wild? You said, yes, it's all those things. But you also said, I'm really excited by how well we're playing. Like, as an example, that Arizona win is going to live forever in Princeton lore. And you see something like that, but Mitch, how many times have we seen a team pull a massive upset only to fall flat and even get blown out in the next round? What's it say about your group that it kept its head and it beat a quality opponent in Missouri in the second round to get to the second weekend?
I appreciate this question very much because it allows me to say that we tried to identify years ago what it's going to take to win 2 games in the tournament. And I got good fortune to be an assistant in the Big Ten, and Bo Ryan, Wisconsin teams, and the Izzo, Michigan State teams, to me, they weren't always perfect, but they just made it all the time. They advanced 2 games, So it's rebounding and defense. We out-rebounded Arizona, got more points in the paint. We out-rebounded Missouri, more points in the paint, took more free throws, made more free throws. And that's been a long time in the making, and we've identified those kinds of guys in the recruiting process. And Princeton is a very attractive place for certain kids. And we have a kid from San Diego. We have a kid coming in from Harvard Westlake, which is right there in L.A. And we're shooting for the stars, and we've got great players that like to play physically.
Mitch Henderson joining us. You kind of answered the question I was going to hit you with, but maybe you can elaborate on that. The Princeton brand already is world-renowned, so it's not like the university needed this additional exposure, but your run of the Sweet 16 may have caught the attention of some younger players who do have the grades and the game to come to the program. Effectively, what are you looking for when you recruit? What's the general profile of a Princeton student-athlete?
So we first cast a wide net in terms of the grades, and then we lock in on what we think the top 20 student athletes are in the country. We're very direct in terms of what we're looking for and about what it's like here. We don't shy away from the rigor. You know, we want you to have a world-class basketball experience and an unrivaled academic experience. And there are kids out there that like that. Now, of course, we're non-scholarship. Certain families, of course, get a significant amount of aid, but you know, you have to work with families on all those things. But then, you know, again, as you probably are well aware, like, I think the name of the game in college basketball these days is adaptability, and you know, transfer portal, NIL, and you look at a place like ours, and you know, over the years, and we couldn't point to a Sweet 16, Jim. You couldn't say like there was a relevant national moment that there is now, and we're just. This is going to give us a big bump in recruiting, and kids know that they can come to a place like this and increase their own personal brand, but while also not sacrificing anything academically or on the court.
Princeton head coach Mitch Henderson on the bus with his team joining us. You know, Mitch, it's interesting. Like, you obviously can't hit the portal hard and look for that quick fix like a lot of other coaches can. But looking at the group that you have right now and how they've played together, worked together, and respond to each other, is that not an advantage, and especially this time of year?
I actually think it is. And I know this might seem, you know, it's not, this is very familiar for me, but, you know, I've got a guy taking thermonuclear dynamics. I've got a guy taking Chinese. I've got multiple economics majors, pre-meds. They learn and grow from one another, and that's what they sign up for. And then also, we're a 5,000 undergrad university. Over 1,000 of the students are athletes. So they're going to school with really like-minded and very high-achieving people that are just like them. So you're just constantly raising the level as you're on each team. And I think the school has such incredible school spirit because of it, because you know, they help each other grow, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Iron will always sharpen iron, and you always want to surround yourself with people who make it better or make you better.
Yes.
So, Mitch, you've been here before. Well, not really. Like, nobody's been there before. You got them there.
Yeah.
The players got them there. I'm curious, what about the experience? Like, I've got two really good friends in the media who played football at Princeton. Kyle Brandt, who worked on this show for years.
Yep.
Ross Tucker, who introduced me to Kyle Brandt. I know that they're loving this run. Generally, what is your fan base like, and what does the experience mean to them?
So Ross Tucker's doing our game on Friday. He's the radio guy, I think. And Ross Tucker sent me a message saying that our win over UCLA is a big reason why he went to Princeton. Now, that's what he told me. I hope that's true. But I will tell you that these sorts of moments, our fans in Sacramento were unreal. It was like they were in hysterics, jumping chokeholds. A friend of mine, roommate of mine, had one of my I have a 5-year-old son who was holding him upside down. You know,
right.
And our fans are going to travel really well to Louisville. And as you know, those games, they put the fans in a section right near your bench, but there's a great access to the court, and those things matter. They matter a lot. Neutral court. So I think that we take a lot of pride here in our sports, and basketball just happens to be one of those areas where you can make a major impact for the university. So I'm psyched. And you mentioned the UCLA game way back in the day, or I as a player, yes, I had a great experience, but nothing like this, Jim. This is a million times better.
So you beat me to that. You already answered that question, but what about that game, Mitch? Mitch Henderson, my guest. What about that game? You were a member of that team that shocked UCLA in 96. What do you remember about that game, and what kind of thoughts do you have when you look back?
So Coach would always say to us, Coach Carrillo would say in his own voice, I'm preparing you to win the game. And he would, when the ball went up in the air, he goes, just run back on defense because you're not going to get it anyways. So we did. You know, the ball went up and all five guys ran back on D. I remember that, you know, they were the defending national champs and we played to win. It was a very low possession game, and I can't say it was the exact same framework against Arizona, but 59-55, we knew we had to keep them in check in transition. And so I draw on that game regularly and often. And then you know, the impact that that game has had on myself and my teammates over the last 25, 27 years, it stands. I mean, there's not a week that goes by when somebody doesn't sort of say, like, oh, you were on that team. And you get into coaching, and it's all you want is to, you know, again, be great at what you're doing, of course, on the court, but also provide an experience for the students, athletes, that was similar to the one I got to have. And this is special, and we want to keep it going.
And I know you're going to make sure that everybody knows that. So really quickly, Greg McDermott obviously is a heck of a coach. He's got his team back in the Sweet 16, second time in 3 years. As you look, Mitch, at the tape of Creighton, what stands out to you the most about the Blue Jays?
They have a kid inside named Carl Brennan. He's unbelievable, 7-1. He blocks so many shots around the rim without fouling. He's got a particularly unusual skill set that we have not seen. And then they've got a kid, Nemhard, who I just thought was unbelievable against Baylor, and among other great players. They are, at this point, I think, you know, the best, very talented team, but also great continuity. And you know, I think at this point in the tournament, you start to see your best isn't quite enough. And we know that we're going to have to be at our best. But we'll also have to have great savvy and guts against some really good players and a really well-coached team. You're right about Greg. He's got his team playing very well.
Well, your group has proven that. It's got guts, it's got savvy, and no one's afraid of the big stage. And I think while it's a great story, let's not lose track of the fact this is a really, really nice team. Mitch, great to have you on. Obviously, it's been a minute. Listen, but really good to talk to you, Mitch. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Looking for some more Jungle Karma, Jim. Thank you very much.
My man, you got it. Mitch, you got it. I don't control it, but if I did, I would say you got it. They're a great, great story and a damn good team. What a good dude. Mitch Henderson, Princeton head coach. All right, there you go. Who you got? Who you got in the Sweet 16? Hour number 3 straight ahead. Open phones coming up next.